There was none among the myriads of men that did Casey. Passions, and then cast me abroad an object for the scorn. Nature decayed around me. The sun became heatless. Rain and snow poured around me. Mighty rivers were frozen. The surface of the earth was hard and chill and bare, and I found no shelter. Oh, earth, how often did I imprecate curses on the cause of my being? The mildness of my nature had fled. Incident occurred from substance of the injustice and ingratitude of their infliction. My daily vows rose for revenge, a deep and deadly revenge, such as would alone compensate for the outrages and anguish I had endured. After some weeks, my wound healed, and I continued my journey. The labors I endured were no longer to be alleviated by the bright sun or gentle breezes of spring. All joy was but a mockery which insulted my desolate state and made me feel more painfully that I was not made for the enjoyment of pleasure. But my toils now drew near a close, and in 2 months from this time I reached the environs of Geneva. It was evening when I arrived, and I retired to a hiding place among the fields that surround it to meditate in what manner I should apply to you. I was oppressed by fatigue and hunger and far too unhappy to enjoy the gentle breezes of evening when the prospect of the sun setting behind the stupendous mountains of Jura. At this time, a slight sleep relieved me from the pain of reflection which was disturbed by the approach of a beautiful child who came running into the recess I had chosen with all the sportiveness of infancy. Suddenly, as I gazed on him, an idea seized me that this little creature was unprejudiced and had lived too short a time to have imbibed the horror of deformity. If, therefore, I could seize him and educate him as my companion and friend, I should not be so desolate in this peopled earth. Urged by this impulse, I seized on the boy as he passed and drew him towards me. As soon as he beheld my form, he placed his hands before his eyes and uttered a shriek. I drew his hand forcibly from his face and said, "Child, what is the meaning of this? I do not intend to hurt you. Listen to me." He struggled violently. "Let me go," he cried. "Monster, ugly wretch, you wish to eat me and tear me to pieces. You are an ogre. Let me go or I will tell my papa." "Boy, you will never see your father again. You must come with me." "Hideous monster, let me go. My papa is a syndic. He is Monsieur Frankenstein. He will punish you. You dare not keep me." "Frankenstein, you belong then to my enemy, to him towards whom I have sworn eternal revenge. You shall be my first victim." The child still struggled and looked at me with epithets which carried despair to my heart. I grasped his throat to silence him. In a moment, he lay dead at my feet. I gazed on my victim and my heart swelled with exultation and hellish triumph. Clapping my hands, I exclaimed, "I too can create desolation. Is not invulnerable. This death will carry despair to him, and a thousand other miseries shall torment and destroy him." died and perished in the attempt to destroy them. While I was overcome by these feelings, I left the spot where I had committed the murder, and seeking a more secluded hiding place, I entered a barn which it appeared to me to be empty. A woman was sleeping on some straw. She was young, not indeed so beautiful as her, whose portrait I held, but of an agreeable aspect and blooming in the loveliness of youth and health. Here, I thought, is one of those whose joy and parting smiles are bestowed on all but me. And then I bent over her. Whispered, "Awake, fairest, thy lover is near. He would give his life but to obtain one look of affection from thine eyes. My beloved, awake." The sleeper stirred. A thrill of terror ran through me. Indeed awake and see me and curse me and denounce the murderer. Thus would she assuredly act if her darkened eyes opened and she beheld me. The thought was madness. It stirred from the fiend within me. Not I, but she shall suffer. Lessons of Felix and the Saint.